Welcome back to Inside the Euros, the podcast to accompany you this summer through Euro 2020. I'm Rick Sharma.
And I'm David Gibbs.
And today, we're tackling Group A. We have Joe Casinelli back with us again, a writer for Reuters, The Times and more. Hello, Joe.
Chaps, how are we?
All good. And of course, we're starting with Group A today. Where else? It's Vieri's Italy. It's Joe's Italy. Well, you'll understand that in a minute. And the other teams in the group are Switzerland, Turkey and Wales. And Italy, of course, are one of the favourites for the group and one of the favourites for the tournament as a whole, in fact. And Joe, as I just mentioned, has an Italian passport. And that's not a lie. He really does. Do you believe in the Azzurri, Joe?
Well, I think I probably believe in the Azzurri a lot more than people believe me when I tell them that I'm Italian. That's for sure. Well, where to start with them? I think you can't look any further than that remarkable squad unveiling that happened on a Tuesday night on Rai Uno. They're like the equivalent, you know, for sort of British listeners of BBC One, you know, the main public television channel in Italy. It was something remarkable. And if anyone hasn't seen it, I would implore you to go on social media and have a look. You've got Roberto Mancini in some sort of pastel blue marching band blazer.
Do you know who reminded me of, Joe? He reminded me of Pascal Savant in Johnny English. You know, the supervillain.
Yeah, he's got a bit of an air of a supervillain about him as well, Mancini, hasn't he? And he was certainly a supervillain for some Italian players to use that as a bit of an introduction. And yeah, there was a bloke in like a full tuxedo as well. Like it was like an Oscars kind of thing, you know, calling out players one by one who'd been selected in the squad. You know, come out, they give Mancini a fist bump. And, you know, they're all wearing the same matching outfits. You've got the Italy crest on it. And it was a bit weird in that it was almost like a show that you'd do to celebrate winning the Euros as opposed to just announcing a squad, because it was like everyone on one by one, waving to the crowd, getting a fist bump, you know.
Sounds like they're setting themselves up for a fall in a way. What about the players who didn't make the squad? Were they just like left there sitting down while the others were all up and dancing?
I wasn't watching live. However, having seen clips online, I'm assuming that they were maybe just not included on the broadcast, because that would have been horrible, wouldn't it? I think, you know, to call them out and go, can you just go over to the right-hand side, please? Donnarumma left, you know, other goalkeeper to the right. I think it would have been a bit harsh. And just sorry to just carry on about that, but it was just that extraordinary that I think that people need to watch the clip of Donnarumma, Insigne and Immobile, three players who were included in the squad. Three people from Naples as well, doing backing vocals to a Neapolitan rapper. It was something like straight out of sort of 1980s television. It was remarkable. And I think that as well, in like a social media world where everyone's kind of done their squad announcements via social media with these funky videos, Italy was a real throwback to bygone times as well. Having said all that, I'm not sure I believe that they can win it, looking at the squad that they've named, but I certainly wish them well, given my family ties and also given just how they managed to announce that squad. Even, you know, Mr. Grumpy Roberto Mancini had a dance on the dance floor. Remarkable.
Is this show where they've just tried to deflect from the announcement? Typical, you're more talking about the revealing than actual squad.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a couple of surprises in the squad as well. I think the biggest surprise was Mancini, not Roberto, no relation to Roberto, but a defender who plays for Roma was left out, and he's been sort of a mainstay of the Italian squad for the last few years. So I'm not sure if they did it to distract people from talking about the actual squad itself. I just think that maybe it was a sort of very different way of doing the announcement, and very original as well. I mean, I'm not sure I could imagine Harry Kane, Jack Grealish and Kieran Trippier doing the backup vocals to, you know, Oasis on the stage as England squad's being announced, for example, or, you know, to a grime artist, because this was the equivalent of, you know, like Skepta or someone like that doing it.
For anyone who hasn't heard, I mean, England actually did release their video squad announcement with Retch32, who did the lyrics.
So just going on to the England squad announcement, I was actually watching Sky Sports News kind of waiting for this announcement. And if you're going to compare how main television channels covered the squad announcements, Sky Sports News had two socially distanced reporters sharing a mobile phone between them, trying to pass it between them at a massive distance, trying to read off who was in the squad and who wasn't. So if that's how like a major news channel is going to announce it, I'd much rather the Italian version where someone sings them onto stage and they all come and they get a fist bump and they're all wearing, you know, these comically European, comically continental Southern European outfits.
Right, we're going to talk to Vieri again. He's not with us in the studio right now, but Dave and I spoke to him earlier on. It's kind of been a decade in the wilderness for Italy, hasn't it? They got to the 2012 final, but they were battered by Spain. They didn't qualify for World Cup 2018, and Chiellini said it was the lowest point for Italian football in the last 50 years. So have they come back to life?
Not making it to the 2018 World Cup was definitely one of the lowest points in the history of Italy. Four times world champions, Euro champions in 1968, and not qualifying for a major tournament is a massive failure, of course. Coming back to life wasn't easy, but Mancini picked up the side after Ventura left and had very clear ideas. Playing attacking football, or definitely much more attacking football compared to what we're used to with Italy, having a clear ideas of the names that would be at the heart of the system, the style 4-3-3 from the beginning, and having done so has put together some incredible numbers, 24 matches unbeaten, 11 consecutive wins, 69% success rate. It's not just the numbers though, it's what you see on the pitch. This Italy side know what they're doing when they face any opponent. Admittedly, they've not had the toughest run of opponents in the past couple of years. Definitely a massive improvement from, of course, the lowest point for Italian football in the last 50 years.
What kind of game does Mancini play? Is it more attacking than we think of Italy?
It's a 4-3-3 system and definitely more attacking than what people generally think of Italy. Not that Italy haven't played attacking football in the past under the likes of Azzelio Vicini or Arrigo Sacchi, but of course we're traditionally seen as a more results-based defensive nation and mentality with which the players go on the pitch and the team perform. 4-3-3 system, attacking flow, two very attacking wingers, often Insigne and Chiesa, attacking wingbacks like Florenzi, who was a midfielder in early on in his career, and Emerson Palmieri on the other flank, and three midfielders who are very good on the ball. So more construction and building play rather than destruction of the opponents, which is with the likes of Jorginho, Verratti, Barella, Pellegrini, Locatelli, a midfield that has a lot of quality. So I think kind of based on what we've seen in the past 10 to 20 years with possession-based positional football being at the center of the biggest sides, I'm thinking Spain, Barcelona, and kind of having a more direct style based on that kind of football.
Italy have gone 26 games unbeaten. That's four games short of a record set by Vittorio Pozzo in the 1930s. Is that just down to the quality of the opposition they've been playing? I mean, their group wasn't so strong.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the opposition wasn't so strong, both in the friendlies and in the group qualifiers. Italy have done well in the Nations League, though. Let's not forget that. Yes, admittedly, under Ventura, the group leading to the World Cup was a difficult one with Spain and only one team qualifying directly. So you need a bit of luck as well. Let's never forget this. But then Italy weren't able to score a single goal against a side like Sweden in the playoff qualifier to that World Cup. Having said that, since then, the opposition has been relatively easier on paper, but then Italy have always struggled against smaller sides, traditionally, perhaps for a lack of motivation. Mancini's Italy is very focused and had as an objective to bring people back to wanting to watch the national team, and they've done that very, very well. So yes, the quality wasn't perhaps top, top level, but you know, we're talking about international football and you always need to be very focused and on it and motivated. And Italy have always been this.
What do you make of Turkey, Switzerland and Wales, their Group A opponents?
I think Italy are definitely favourites. We can all say that because of what we've seen in the past couple of years, the tradition, having the fans at the ground, at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome, Italy's home. I mean, all of these things put together make it, I think, easier for Italy than the other ones. But Turkey, Switzerland and Wales shouldn't be underestimated. There's a few Swiss players who have done very, very well in Italy in the past years. I think overall, what's important is that Italy go into the competition with the same mentality I mentioned earlier. Always motivated, never underestimating their opponent, adapting somewhat to the opponent, but mainly knowing their strengths. So I think Switzerland are probably the biggest threat, but Turkey always have a lot of support. And we've seen Wales at the last Euros, what they've been able to do as well. Italy have to be very, very careful, but I think are clear favourites.
Anything else we should know about your boys, V?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how it pans out because, as we mentioned in the preview, this year delay makes a difference in the good and the bad for several sides. And Italy perhaps would have been in better form a year ago, but at the same time benefited in terms of experience at club level for certain players, for certain key players. I'm thinking Federico Chiesa, who's played a whole season at Juventus and Champions League football. I'm thinking the likes of Barella at Inter, Insigne playing consistently well all season with Napoli, Immobile adding another solid season of goal scoring and also scoring at Champions League level regularly. So this is something to keep in the mix, into consideration. And I think it'll be very interesting to see what this adds to this Italy side, who I think are very, very exciting and perhaps could be seen as underdogs abroad. But I see them progressing from the group and I see them going far.
Next up is Turkey. And I'm quite interested in Turkey. I kind of like them ever since they went really far in the 2002 World Cup. They had that goalkeeper, Rusty Rakobo, always used to paint his face, you know, with war paint. And they looked decent on paper, actually. They didn't finish too far behind France in qualifying. In The Guardian's look at Turkey, they said it was the best Turkish team since 2002, which is promising. And they've also got a lot better at defending, letting in just 3 goals in the qualifiers. Everyone knows Soyuncu from Leicester, Juve defender Demiral, and is Kabak at Liverpool any good, Joe?
Bit of a mixed bag, to be honest with you. I think everyone had a good laugh at his nightmare debut against Leicester, where he almost chopped Alisson Becker in half. It was a bit of a bumpy start from him. He was a relatively solid citizen after that. He's quite a big unit, although maybe not as good in the air as you'd like. I remember a game against Everton where he just kept misjudging the flight of the ball, just kept going over his head. He put a ball out for a corner with a header after about 7 seconds of the game gone. So that kind of set the tone for his performance. So he reminded me quite a lot of Dejan Lovren.
Oh, no.
For anyone who's watched Liverpool over the past, he was a bit headless at times, but also capable of very good moments.
I'd just like to say, that is the nicest thing I've ever heard Joe say about Dejan Lovren over the years. Everything else Joe said has been much, much worse than that.
One of the best defenders in the world by his own admission. And to be fair, you know, comparatively speaking to the size of the world, technically he is. So yeah, but Kabak, you know, he's a young player, but I think it's quite telling that Liverpool didn't take up the option to buy him, and they've opted to sign Konate from Leipzig instead. But they're not even signing both of them. Kabak had 6 months, you know, where he was able to impress, but obviously didn't do enough, and he actually finished the season injured as well. So I wonder what his fitness will be like going into the tournament.
Well, maybe the most important thing for Turkey is Yusuf Yeşilçay and Burak Yılmaz, who are at Lille. They had an incredible season. Yılmaz banged in like 16 goals as they won Ligue 1. And he's 35 years old, but in just amazing form. Is this the kind of attack that can take them to the latter stages of the tournament?
Yes. I mean, the Yılmaz story is incredible, isn't it? And I think we should maybe point out here as well that remarkably wasn't selected in the Ligue 1 team of the season, I believe, which and Neymar was ahead of him, and the stats kind of don't really back that decision up. I think that was maybe more of a, we can't leave him out of the team from the sort of the head honchos at Ligue 1. Yeah, so I think that Turkey, you know, they recently thrashed Holland in a World Cup qualifying as well, didn't they? And Yılmaz, I think, may have even scored a hat trick in that game. So he's in the form of his life. And okay, he's 35, so you've got to say he's approaching the end, and what a way to go out it would be by firing his team at least through the group in this tournament. I don't think people maybe think they can go, well, certainly all the way, but you know, if they could get to the round of 16 or even a quarter final spot, I think that would be a success for Turkey, because I think they might be focusing on the 22 World Cup in Qatar. However, what a good way to warm up for it that would be. Even Yilmaz might still be going then, who knows?
Yeah, let's see. And I mean, Turkey to me seem like proper dark horse material. It's the kind of team that you look at before the tournament and start to get excited about them. And you wonder if they can go far and probably won't end up going far. But what do you reckon, Dave?
Turkey are a side, I mean, I think they're the youngest side in the tournament, I believe. So the youngest average age. So they've got potential to do well. Potentially it could be three teams that can qualify. So the opportunity is there. They could nick your results against Wales and Italy by the odd goal and boom, you're already into the knockout stages.
Yeah, and they're one of them teams, I think, as well, who seem to just improve their performance at a tournament. I think that they really do pull together. I remember their epic 3-2 comeback at Euro 2008 against the Czech Republic when I believe they were 2-0 down and scored the winning goal in the last minute. I think it was Tuncay who was heavily involved in that. For listeners of a certain vintage, might remember him from his Middlesbrough days in the Premier League. And by the time they actually reached the semi-finals of that tournament, and by the time they got there, I think that they could only name sort of 14 players in their match day squad, 15 players, including both of their substitute goalkeepers. And they really did take the game to Germany. Obviously, there's a share sort of a history there between the two sides of plenty of German-born players in there who maybe had a point to prove. However, they're the kind of team who there's always a sort of a rogue performer who stands out at a tournament. You know, you mentioned Rust, who I think he got a move to Barcelona off the back of the 2002 World Cup. Colin Kazim Richards is another one from Euro 2008 as well that you will remember well in the UK. So they're one of those teams who someone tends to stand out for and have a really good tournament as well. So I'll be interesting to see if that might be the case this time around as well. And who knows, for Kabak, maybe it will be him at the heart of that Turkey defence and he will get himself an even better move than Liverpool.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, they've got a lot of decent players as well as the ones you mentioned, you know, like Yokuzlu, who was at West Brom. I know they went down, but he had a good season, at least personally. Kalinoglu's another one. Karaman. There's quite a few about. Now I move on to Wales. Now Wales, as we mentioned on the previous pod, had a good Euro 2016. They got to the semi-finals. Gareth Bale was on fire. And he's just spent a few months warming up for the Euros with Tottenham, basically. Rob Page will be the guy on the bench with, you know, as interim manager, with Ryan Giggs in trouble at the moment. He's on trial next year, having been charged with, I'm going to quote, coercive control and actual bodily harm to an ex-girlfriend and also assault of another woman. He denies their charges, although he has not made an official plea. Probably best to leave that. But the team itself is quite exciting. They thrilled last time around, beating Belgium in that famous game. And they got some decent players. I like Ampadu. I like Aaron Ramsey, of course. And Bale, at his best, can be unstoppable. What do you reckon, lads?
They've still got the spine of the team where Gareth Bale, Aaron Ramsey, Joe Allen, they're all in the squad. Ramsey probably not had much game time at Juventus this season. So he might not be as sharp as they want. But I'm sure he'll be keen to play. I believe Ben Davies is back from injury. The Spurs left back. Again, like Turkey, pick up a few results, they can do well. They're missing a couple of players. Tom Lawrence is not involved. Rabbi Matondo is not included in the squad as well. They're youthful products who could do well. And obviously they have Dan James, who's obviously just been to a Europa League final. Question mark is probably still out on him. But he has scored a few goals in international football in the last 12 months. Could be a good option.
It's a good point on Dan James. He's not a player that I've rate particularly. I don't think he's done hugely well at Manchester United. But coming into a tournament like this, without having had the sort of load of minutes that a lot of other players have had, he's quite a bright attacking talent. And it will be interesting. Get him running at the fullbacks, get him running at defences, and maybe he can help Wales cause a surprise.
Yeah, well, I think he's definitely a player who, if you're playing sort of deep-lying counter-attacking football, which you expect maybe Wales will play, then I think that he's actually a very good player for it. Gareth Bale's lost a bit of his explosiveness over the years. I think in the 5 years that he's had since 2016, injuries taken its toll. But Dan James is certainly a player with that explosiveness and speed on the counter-attack. We saw in the Europa League final, he takes a mean penalty as well, which helps if any games go to shootouts. And one player who I'd just like to point out for Wales is a lad called Harry Wilson, who came through the Liverpool ranks. He's not really had to, well, he's played in a couple of friendlies for Liverpool, and I think he may have played in the League Cup game. And he's not really ever made an impact on the first team squad, and I fully expect him to move on this summer on a permanent basis. I think he's 24 now as well, so he's getting a bit old to be loaned out. However, you're talking about players capable of the absolute brilliant goals to maybe a goal of the tournament contender. We had Robson Kanu against Belgium last time, and Harry Wilson is certainly the kind of player who is capable of getting the ball from 30, 35 yards out and putting it in the top corner. And he reminds me a little bit of Gareth Bale, younger Gareth Bale in that sense, where he was just blasting balls in from all angles at all distances with his wand of a left foot.
And Harry Wilson has been playing sometimes as a false nine with Wales, and Page said ahead of this week, he said that Aaron Ramsey might be used as a false nine sometimes as well. And so it might be difficult for teams to kind of get a grip on Wales and really understand them. I want to take a little bit of umbrage what you said about Gareth Bale, because not because you're wrong, because he obviously has lost a yard, Gareth Bale. He's not as dynamic and as good as he was in his prime, in his heyday. But I wrote him off earlier this season. I thought he was done, and he was just waste of time, waste of money, not just for Real Madrid, but also at Tottenham. And then when Mourinho left, and even before Mourinho left, he started to come back. And with Mourinho gone, Bale in the last few weeks of the season did have some very, very good performances. And, you know, maybe he's just warmed himself up just to the right degree to shine again for Wales at the tournament.
And who knows, with Carlo Ancelotti back at Madrid, maybe he's eyeing a future there as well, because he certainly didn't have one under Zinedine Zidane.
One thing we're also going to take into consideration with this group especially is some of the games are going to be played in Baku, in Azerbaijan. They're going to have to factor in, especially Wales, they're going to have to travel to Baku. And, you know, they're quite lucky. They've got first game against Switzerland and then Turkey afterwards, both in Baku, before they move on to Rome. The travelling, the time difference, this could all play effect into some of their players. So this is something they've got to be mindful of as well.
Well, I'm sure Wales's trip to Baku will be a little bit better than my friend Tim Lee's trip. He's going there for the tournament. We're going to talk to him at some point on the pod. And he said to me today that it's just a mere 18-hour journey via Frankfurt and Kiev for him to get to Baku. Well, I'm sure the Welsh FA are going to organise a chartered jet to go straight there.
I have been to Baku before as well. It wasn't quite as arduous a journey as Tim was having, but I did have to fly via Istanbul. I had an extremely long layover at Istanbul airport because it's quite an inaccessible outpost at the far east of Europe.
It almost sounds quite threatening, what Tim said earlier. I head to Baku on Wednesday before dawn breaks.
I think as well, with Baku, it's one of the few stadiums where they're going to have quite a larger capacity of fans in attendance. They might get some of the Welsh fans going over there within quarantine rules, where they'll have to be vaccinated and done several tests or whatever. Well, you could see some Welsh fans in Baku, which could give them a boost.
Yeah, the Wales fans in 2016 were, obviously 2016 was in France, so it was a pre-COVID world, so travel was a lot easier. But the Wales fans in France were, after Iceland, probably the best fans at the tournament, I think. Everyone kind of got caught up in a bit of Wales fever. There was the Don't Take Me Home song that they were singing at all games, and they travel well, and hopefully they will be able to this time round, even if it is a bit more difficult.
Yeah, I bet on Wales. I was in Las Vegas in the Euros because I was at the Copa America, and then I did a road trip in the Euro 2016. So I watched a lot of the games early over there because of the time zone difference. And I was in Vegas, and me and my friends, one of the few places where you can make sports bets in America, we bet on Wales to get to the final, and they let us down. But I won't hold it against him. It was a great effort. Finally, last but not least, moving on to Switzerland. See, Vladimir Petkovic is going into his third tournament as coach, and he steered them to the last 16 in Euro 2016 and in the Russia World Cup. So they're not terrible. But I've got to be honest, I'm not too excited by them. Like, I'm going to watch virtually all the games at the Euros, but some of the ones I'm least thrilled about are Switzerland. Because they're not even the level of the minnows, like the Finlands and the North Macedonias, who it's kind of interesting and exciting to see them at their first tournament. And the Switzerland squad, well, Fabian Schär's missed a lot of the season at Newcastle, and he's basically their star player, along with Jerdan Shaqiri, who Joe knows well at Liverpool. He hasn't featured too much this season. And the team looks kind of functional to me. But if there are two exciting players I'm interested in, it's probably the sort of wide players, Ricardo Rodriguez and Kevin Mbabu, who are more dynamic.
Yeah, Switzerland are one of those teams who every tournament, you know, they're through the groups, last 16, out. essentially. As you said before, Rick, you can pretty much put your mortgage on them getting through the group, but they don't really do anything else, which is a shame, because maybe if they got into a run, then they would. But they just fall at the first hurdle, whether that's on penalties, I think it was, against Poland at Euro 2016, because Poland then played Portugal in the quarterfinals, which also went to penalties. Switzerland are just one of those teams, though, aren't they? I think that given sort of the Swiss neutrality and the fame that Swiss people have for being sort of very down the middle, I think that people probably don't get behind them that much, because essentially Switzerland is just one of those countries that is just seen as a neutral. And it's, well, you never, it's not like, you know, a big rivalry like Germany and Holland or England and France. You wouldn't ever say, you know, oh, hate the Swiss, you know, what's to hate about them? The thing is, there's you're never also going to hear people going, oh, I love watching Switzerland. I love them. I really get behind them at a tournament. They're my second team. So, yeah, as you said with Shaqiri, not a lot of game time this season. Been injured for a great deal of it. But he is another player who loves a sort of worldy goal at a big tournament. So expect him to be shooting from, he takes all the free kicks and takes all the set pieces, that kind of thing. So he's definitely someone who you can expect to see maybe trying to at least get himself in the equation for goal of the tournament, and also more than likely playing for a transfer as well, because there's probably not much of a future for him at club level at Liverpool.
They've got a few players people will recognise. Fabian Schär of Newcastle, Brahim Bolo at Gladbach, Hasse Seferovic for Benfica. So they have got some attacking players who could do well, score goals. So they'll be... I've
got a fantastic goalkeeper as well, Jan Sommer. Very good goalkeeper.
Most likely will get out the group. It's a three-way battle with Switzerland, Turkey and Wales, who potentially will get second and possibly that third place. I think Italy will easily top the group here.
Yeah, I reckon Italy too. It's hard to look against them. A little fact about Switzerland you might or might not know, they've never won a game in the knockout rounds of a major tournament since 1938. That's why no one ever gets behind them, because they're always out by the time it gets to the quarterfinals. And with that, we're going to wrap up our chat about Group A. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you liked it. Leave us a review on Apple iTunes if you can. And of course, follow us on social media, Twitter, at Inside Euros Pod, and Instagram, also at Inside Euros Pod. See you next time.